Listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville, and the Beaches, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Vieira, 94.7 FM, and W264AS, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Begee on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. We are so pleased to be here in our studio to have a wonderful, unscripted, very informative, and very educational show as well today. Ellen Little is here, my co-host.
Great to be with everybody here.
Yes.
So fun.
And everyone had a really busy weekend. Every week, or I should say every Monday, Ellen and I are here heating up the airwaves with kitchen table topics facing us here in Brevard County, around our state, around our nation. And I take it one step further and we talk about things that are going on God's magnificent planet all over the world as well. So that whatever we can do, we can help the human race.
Amen.
Right? Mm-hmm. So today's show, we've got our good friend Lisa. There's so many Lisas in my life. My friend Linda Miewenberg is here, and the name is spelled just like the way we say it, which is wonderful.
Right.
And Linda is here to speak today about we're talking about the dental therapist. And there was a discussion in Tallahassee recently about us having dental hygienists here in the state of Florida to help people in the nursing homes, schools, and places like that where people just can't get an appointment with a dentist. And so she's going to talk to us a little bit about that. So, Linda, before we go into our call-in guest, just say hello to my listeners on AM 1510 and tell us a quick little bit about yourself.
Hello, everyone. I'm Linda Miewenberg. Very happy to be here. Sita and I go back a long way, and this is, I don't know, fifth time I've been on the show. But today I want to talk about something I'm very passionate about, and that's getting a licensed, well-educated dental therapist. We do have dental hygienists already in Florida, dental assistants, but we are in a crisis as far as access to care in many of our counties in Florida. And I'm going to talk about that, some of the statistics that have been collected on our demographics here, and why we need this mid-level practitioner to meet the needs of people like Sita had mentioned. That
low access, right, to care,
yes,
in areas. And we know in Florida there are two counties that don't even have a dentist, and we'll talk a little bit about that. And then before we go to the phone, we have my friend Jeannie is calling in from South Bend, Indiana. Hold on a second. Ruth Lambert is here. Ruth, thank you for sponsoring today's show.
My pleasure, Sita. I'm always so proud of what you do.
Thank you.
Your amazing commitment to the community and the wider world.
Right. And Jan Swiatek?
That's right.
Is
very,
here.
Very good.
Yeah, I said it.
Hey, way to go.
So,
Island girl.
And you, Ellen, is here too. So before we start with our show, which we're going to devote so much time today talking about the low-income areas, the nursing homes, and the need for a dental therapist, I just wanted our guest to know that, you know, of lately we've been having so many people jump into the race nationally for to be the next president or to get into the White House in 2020 and run against President Trump. And you know, freedom of speech comes with a responsibility. And whether you like the person who's elected or not, we still have to respect the office. And so I've been watching on the Democratic side and on the Republican side how many people are jumping in the race. And then yesterday I happened to see a good friend of mine. Jeannie was in South Bend, Indiana for Mayor Pete. I hope I'm not saying his name right. Buttigieg? Am I correct, Jeannie?
Yes.
Buttigieg. Yes. And I said, my goodness, I would love to have Jeannie call in and speak to our listeners a little bit about the experience yesterday. Because, you know, me as a Hindu, I call myself a Hindu for peace, but I do believe that in order to have true peace and policies that affect change in all human lives, we have to change our behaviors towards each other on this magnificent planet before the good Lord calls us home. And when I heard Pete talking yesterday, Mayor Pete, I thought, wow, he is brilliant and articulate, and he knows so much. So, Jeannie, tell us a little bit about yourself, and how come you ended up being right behind his in-laws yesterday in South Bend, Indiana?
Yes, hi there. Thank you very much, Sita, for allowing me to come and be on your show. I am a Christian Democrat out of Muncie, Indiana. I ran in 2018 for Congress in the district. I wasn't able to win at that point, but I am planning on running again in 2020. And during my campaign last year, I met Mayor Pete. He's the new presidential hopeful out of South Bend, and he's the mayor there. And he and I just instantly hit it off. We talked a lot about our faith and the idea that, you know, we want to spread the word, make it a little bit more known that there are a lot of Democrats out there that are Christian. We have good values. We are people of faith. And even if we're not Christian, you know, we're people that, like you said, have strong backgrounds and, you knowing how to treat people right and doing the right thing and, you know, for service to others and to our community. And so we hit it off. And so, yes, I was able to go there yesterday. I was invited to sit back on the side of, you know, some people that are either running for offices or, you know, various people that are in the Democratic Party here in Indiana. And so I was there. I was able to meet Pete's mom. He had just lost his dad, I think, a few months ago. Then also his in-laws, Chasen, his husband, his mom and dad were there too. And so I met them, and we kind of hit it off too. He and his mom and I started, we kind of laughed over a situation because there was someone that didn't know who she was.
Yeah.
They were trying to boot her out of the way.
And the good thing about him is, I mean, his record is, I mean, it's a stellar record. He's a U.S. Navy Reserve officer. He graduated from Harvard University. He is the mayor of South Bend, and he's the first openly gay Democratic candidate. And his platform is just beautiful. It's all about humanity, universal health care, the environment, universal background checks on firearms. He wants to make sure that people have equality and discrimination. And he is going to tackle comprehensive immigration reform as well as wealth inequality, which are things that all of us talk about all the time, but not everybody spring into action. So I noticed when he was talking yesterday, there was so much applause when he said things like, we have to get away from politics of the past and move on with the future. And I like that. Did you see, what was the reaction yesterday when he said that?
Oh, it was, the crowd was already excited. You know, that was the home team and everything like that. A lot of people that, you know, had been following him for some time. He's been a force in economic development there and turning things around in South Bend. You know, the last 8 years or so that he's been there, I mean, it's taken such a huge upswing. The place that we were at was a former factory, Studebaker factory, that used to manufacture cars. It had been long since closed. He's turned that around. Now they're using that as an incubator for new businesses. And so the part that we were in was the next phase that's going to be renovated and turned into the other side, which is brand new offices, beautiful place where they can, you know, begin to grow and nourish these new businesses that are up and starting in South Bend. So, yeah, it was, I believe it's just, you know, a feeling of a freshness and, you know, people are calling him kind of the new Barack or, you know, thing like that. And I know, you know, he's kind of come from, you know, a smaller town in Indiana. But I feel that there is this need for a refreshing and a renewing. And, you know, not that, you know, what he said yesterday was that, you know, he talked about we have to see ourselves in a new way going forward. We have to, you know, not necessarily think that America is going to be viewed in the same way as it has been in the past, especially in terms of some of these economic, you know, some of these jobs that are not coming back. We have to have, you know, there has to be new manufacturing.
I heard him when he talked about the new American generation and the leadership that our country needs. And he talked about the three principles that he was going to focus on, which was freedom, democracy, and security. And I think that is just beautiful. He summed it up in three words. And, you know, I lived in Marion, Indiana for a while when my husband did his residency at Marion General. And I remember seeing factories that were closed and people had to sell their homes. And I remember the conversations in that small town. What would we do when a factory closed? People literally had to sell their houses for half of what it's worth and move to to Chicago or South Bend, or they moved to Fort Wayne. I still have friends in Marion, Indiana, and unfortunately, it became almost like a ghost town. So when I saw him in that building, it reminded me of the RCA plant in Marion, Indiana, and how many people, when that plant closed, how many people lost jobs. And you're right, technology did change because they used to make, I think, the parts for the televisions and things. And now with technology, you don't need that.
No. You barely can find a TV. I don't think, actually, I think someone did a research. You actually cannot find a TV that's made in America. In America. You
right.
You really can't. I mean, those jobs are gone. We have to look toward, you know, new manufacturing, new ways of doing things. And I think that he is the future of that. And also, as a millennial, you know, he can grab he's grabbing the young vote, but he's also, I mean, there were a lot of older people there as well. I mean, he's really, he's kind of going across the board, and I know that there are some more established candidates, but they're going to have run for their money with Mayor Pete, because he's
well, you've been on his bandwagon from day one. I've watched your Facebook feed, and you, so now you ran against Mike Pence's older brother, Craig. Was it Greg? When we met, you told us you ran against him in, when did you run? In 2018. Yeah,
yes,
recently.
Yes,
yeah,
yes,
yeah.
Yes.
So, and so why did you run, and what was the important things that you ran for? What was your platform?
Well, as a Christian Democrat, I have about six generations of pastors in my family. My husband's also a pastor of a local church, assistant pastor, and I'm a person of faith. And I feel as if, you know, there are so many, just the tenor and the temperature of our country, there's just so many, you know, disagreements and divisions. And I want to be the voice of a new tomorrow and a new leadership that, you know, that not only is compassionate and calm, but also courageous and able to stand up against wrongdoing. That's part of what's wrong with Congress right now, in my opinion. We've got a lot of people. When you see something wrong, you don't just, you know, ignore it and turn your back. You're really supposed to speak up. And as a Christian, as a person of faith, that's where I wanted to come out and be different and, you know, have that voice. Other concerns that I had, too, were, you know, like gun control, common sense. I believe, you know, in the right to bear arms. We have guns, you know, that are locked up and protected, and we have a responsibility to bear those. But also at the same time, too, there is common sense gun reform. There's no sense in people on the streets having weapons of war. Those are some things I talked about, trying to, even though I'm pro-choice, I tried to, you know, implement and embrace and advocate for, you know, reproduction rights for all men and women. And then to be able to have, you know, birth control that was affordable and accessible to everyone.
Right. That's what we all call comprehensive sex education, as well as an academic and trade. So, and then the good thing is you're also a journalist and you also publish your own newspaper. So give us a link to your newspaper. And when you worked as a journalist, did you cover any political campaigns and stuff? Because you're well-versed in the Democratic Party and the what we stand for, things like equality and opportunities for all and public education and stuff. Did you follow those type of politics when you were working as a journalist?
Funny that you would ask that. Yes, we do have a bi-monthly newspaper called The Good News. It's a play off words because The Good News is the gospel of Jesus Christ. So I kind of put that in there too. But every single article that we do, we try to bend it forward toward what's the solution? What's the good thing here? It doesn't make a difference. Even if it's bad news, it can be turned into good news. Let's look at the good, find the good, and praise it. So, but in terms of politics, yes, my first politician that I covered was Dan Quayle when I first started, probably almost 29 years ago, in Huntington, Indiana. I went up there, it was a big, you know, big to-do. It was the vice president nominee, and it was just kind of a big thing. But I've covered many, many politicians. I've covered, you know, I've gone and I've worked at USA Today for a while. I filled in for some slots there every once in a while. I've covered Mike Pence, when he was governor here, when he was actually the congressman for this district as well. So I've been, you know, privy to those things. And so I think it's been given, by the grace of God, has given me an opportunity to, you know, really understand the issues, whether it's the board of wards and the school board issues on a local level, all the way up to, you know, the federal level and how things are done in Congress, getting bills passed, you know, important legislation, things like that.
I wish you luck because I know you want to run again in 2020 and you got about 35% of the vote. And so, yeah. But I know you'll be following Mayor Pete and you'll keep us updated on what's going on. And don't forget, if he comes to Florida, I need to get my Ruth will come with me. I know that. And maybe Linda and Eleanor. I want to meet him. I want to shake his hand and say hello. I think he's terrific. But
you'd be very impressed.
I know. I'm impressed with you and all the things you've done as well. And I'm so blessed that we actually met. Out of that entire rally, I had to pick one person to hang with, and it was you. I think Ruth probably saw you that day too. She was here for the gun rally, the rally we had. Yeah, and you know what? And it's good because we exchanged numbers, we became friends, and I think it's that Marion, Indiana, small town girl feel. I love it, and I loved living there. The people were so family oriented. So thank you for being my friend. We will keep up with each other and what you're doing with the campaign. And
thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
So stay tuned in because we got a lot of great more information to share.
Right. Hey, don't forget to give us the link to your newspaper. That's okay. We'll get it. So anyway, isn't that awesome?
I got it. I put it on.
You attend a rally for as an activist here in town for sensible gun reform, and out of hundreds of people, I picked Janine, and we hung out that day. It was fun.
Magic, Sita.
We always have. Well, God always sends angels when you need it, and you learn from people. Not all of us were born with the same with the same senses, and not all of us knows the answers to all the problems in life. And so it's good to listen and learn. And so now we're going to learn a little bit about the dental therapist, right? Yeah. So
and the legislation, which
right?
I don't think a whole lot of people know about. So, and I already posted the website on our Facebook page, so it's right underneath the post. So make sure that if you haven't been on Facebook yet, you check that out.
Sure. Yeah, but Linda,
the website you're talking about is Floridians for Dental Access.
Yes, that's the one. Yes.
The thing is, that's where you can get all the information. The bill number is Senate Bill 684, which has met in committee, and that's where it stopped. And we are thrilled that it was able to get to the Senate committee with discussion and testimony from both sides. We have over 50 agencies that support the dental therapist legislation. The only one that doesn't would be the Florida Dental Association. And they have put a lot of money into fighting this bill.
So how did you get involved with this? Because, you know, we all talk about healthcare, and we know that the rural communities are so affected when we don't have proper care for people. And that seems to be like in the middle of this dental therapist bill.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, actually, the federal government studies this and the demographics. In Florida, we always come in dead last for having access to care. In fact, 63 of our 67 counties have been designated as dental shortage areas. So that's significant. There is no way we will be able to have enough dentists to provide that care. So why not have a mid-level provider like we do in the medical arena, a nurse practitioner, a physician assistant? This person would be licensed, trained, examined to do minimal level service. And basically, the important thing is to get the dental health literacy raised so that people understand how important it is to have good oral care from the time the baby's born, teaching mothers what to do during pregnancy that can impact the development of the teeth. And the dental therapist could fill this position as well as be a cost-effective healthcare provider. Either working in a dental office, a mobile unit, in a school, all
nursing homes, most
nursing homes, all supervised by a dentist.
So why do you think? Okay, we talk about healthcare. We talk about mental health, physical health, financial literacy. We talk about everything. But why is the dental health always coming in last when it should be first? Because we are what we eat. Everything, right? We need our teeth, we need good gums, we need proper hygiene. Why is it that every time we talk about dental care, it's always as though it's over there and other health care is here.
Well, I don't know that I can directly answer that question, Sita, because I certainly can appreciate that it is that way. One of the things we need to do, as I mentioned, is increase the literacy of why oral health is so important. We now have plenty of scientific data and studies to show that, number one, digestion begins in the mouth. If a child has malocclusion, they can't chew their food properly when they have to have
a soft. And malocclusion is just crooked teeth
that are out of alignment,
right,
that don't touch properly. Thank you.
Yeah.
Sometimes we get caught up
I
in
know,
our lingo.
You dental lingo people. I'm going to keep us straight.
The and bite then, is off.
And Sita, right. You probably see this in the nursing home. If you are without teeth or improper fitting dentures or your mouth hurts, you have to eat soft foods and it gets caught in the cheeks, thereby providing a wonderful substrate for the bacteria to live on, create acid, and destroy the teeth. So
right.
Bacterial infections cause tooth decay.
Right.
Okay? And people need to understand that. You know, when a mother drops a pacifier, picks it up, puts it in her mouth and rinses it off, gives it back to the baby, she's just contaminated that child's oral bacterial flora with her bacteria.
And we see
and
that so much.
Because you're not born with
yeah,
disease.
Yeah, we see
producing.
A lot of moms doing that.
And so that's education that needs to be done.
Right. And we see a lot of heart ailments as well associated with dental. And I see Ruth shaking her head about that. Ruth, maybe you could fill us in what you've learned about that. Because I see people having a lot of heart problems that are associated with gum disease or poor oral health.
They actually say that one way to check whether you have a heart condition is to look at the gums, because if they're very badly inflamed and you have poor dental hygiene, your chance of having a heart problem is dramatically increased. And you wouldn't imagine that your teeth have anything to do with your heart, but it's directly related.
Yes.
Well, another thing, Sita, that you again probably run into is we lose a lot of our elderly once they become hospitalized or in a nursing home due to pneumonia. So it's also been shown, this is what goes on in the mouth, that infection swallowed, it goes through the bloodstream. It can be related to pancreatic cancer, rheumatoid arthritis, low birth weight babies, heart disease, diabetes. The list keeps growing and growing. So we have to realize the importance of getting early prevention, education, pregnant mothers, starting with them, and then into the children. Again, a dental therapist would provide that mid-level person in a cost-effective manner to not only get education, but dental services.
So, I mean, it's mind-boggling why any organization, whether it's a dental or medical or whoever, would push back on a mid-level position like a dental therapist that we know as human beings, we see the need for it. Doesn't when people get elected to office, they don't see the need for what we need, for what people have to have in this country? I mean, what happens to them? They go in, you get elected for the right reasons. People think you're going to go there and make a difference. But then you've got rural communities that does not have a dentist. Or you have to wait 2 months for an extraction or cleaning. So what happens to these people when they get elected? They stop thinking? They lose common sense?
The other thing that happens to people in these more rural areas, many of our children are on Medicaid, which does pay for dental services. You have to find a dentist that accepts that form of insurance in order for your child to be seen. Where most of them end up is the emergency room, which becomes very costly. And I think we're now into the billions that are spent annually on preventable oral care ending up in the emergency room. You know, and it's now become so exacerbated that where do they go when they're in pain? They've been in pain, they can't get into a dentist, they end up in the emergency room, who are not trained to treat oral care. So they give them a prescription, probably for antibiotic, maybe something for pain.
But there's still an underlying cause, yeah.
And say, follow up with your dentist. Well, therein lies the problem.
So who's pushing back on this bill?
The only one that is against it is Florida Dental Association, and that starts at the national level. We now have 10 states that have enacted dental therapist legislation.
And they're almost like a nurse practitioner or
exactly,
physician assistant.
A mid-level practitioner.
And did you have any friendly voices in Tallahassee that actually listened to you and said, this is remarkable that we can do this? Did you have anyone that actually wanted to listen?
I watched the entire testimony, and I can't say that I ever did see that. We had several dentists. In fact, Dr. Frank Catalano, from University of Florida Dental School, who's a pediatric dentist, gave wonderful testimony. He's been studying this for 12 years and the effectiveness of it in other states where it's been implemented. He's a researcher.
It makes no sense for someone to push back. I mean, what can we do on Viewpoint with CETA and friends to spread the message that we need dental therapists, just like we need nurse practitioners, just like we need physician assistants, to be of assistance to people in our state?
Legislators are elected. We need to become activists. We need to call. Ellen has put the link on your website, I believe,
Facebook page. Yep.
Please call your legislator and tell them how important this is. We even have scripts that you can follow for a voice message or an email message. And we need to educate our legislators. You know, we vote them
in. Well, they all brush their teeth, and they all have children, and they all live in areas where we have income inequality in so many areas. We do have children in public schools that don't have food to eat, much less have a toothbrush and proper toothpaste, and they don't see dental hygienists or dental therapists or dentists. So one would have to be blind to live in the state of Florida and not understand there are underprivileged people in the state that needs such a thing.
And that's why I'm on this show.
That's
there
right.
There we go.
We want to thank Ruth Lambert, who has always been an activist. And I know once she knows what you're doing, she'll be on this bandwagon. And I know you want to add something to that, Ruth.
Yeah, I wanted to actually ask Linda, first of all, which states among the states that she said have already adopted oral therapists?
I don't have that right in front of me because we just recently had a few. I know
New Mexico has one.
Alaska, Minnesota have had the longest standing dental therapy program. So some good research has been done in those areas on the effectiveness of it and the amount of people that have had oral care as a result of that. Also, I'm from the state of Michigan. I've been in Florida now for almost 8 years. And when I was in Michigan in the fall, they had just enacted it.
So I think that being able to model other states getting a really good outcome would really help convince people here.
What we'll do is we'll Google it on our break and see what we can find out and make sure that we get that information. But we're going to hear from a few of our sponsors and take a quick station break, and we'll be right back with Viewpoint with CETA and Friends right after these messages.
Is sponsored by the friends and family of CETA McGee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply CETA Skincare, and these great sponsors. Portions of CETA and Friends is brought to you by Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture Store inside the Merritt Square Mall at the Sears Wing. Save big on furniture working with a flexible family-owned store with all the brands you love, from Ashley, Serta, Coaster, and so and more. Brand new, warranties as well, and delivery and haulaway available at a fraction of the cost of most stores and delivered in 7 to 10 days. Free, no credit checking and financing, and free interior design. The owner, Scott Palmer, has been in the mattress and furniture business for over 30 years, and Cloud9 has been serving Central Florida for 7 years now. Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture Store, available at 321-459-2473. Again, call them 321-459-2473 or visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With 3 locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today. We'll be right back.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. This is our second segment. We still have Linda Miebenberg with us and Ruth Lambert and our friend who's visiting, Jan Swiatek. I got it. I said it correctly. So Linda Miebenberg has been a graduate of the College of Health Professions, earning her associate's dental degree in dental hygiene and a bachelor's degree in allied health education, respectively. She also has had a distinguished career as a dental hygienist, and now she has her own consulting firm called Professional Development Association. Right. I was on your website this morning, and I was trying to watch some of the videos, and I'm like, this is pretty cool, all the teaching you've done to ensure that people have quality oral healthcare.
Well, I can tell you, when I moved to Florida, it was almost like going to a third world country. I have served in South Africa. I've been to New Zealand, where they use dental therapists. And when I came here and saw the statistics on how many people do not have access to oral care, it was frightening. So I have done a lot of volunteer presentations right here in our own county, speaking to senior groups, speaking into schools, especially during February, Children's Dental Health Month. I love working with the kids. I love working with the people that are my age. You know, I'm a baby boomer, and it's wonderful to be able to answer questions. People have so many questions about oral health that they feel like they've not had that information growing up, especially, you know, if they're in their 70s, maybe didn't have care as a child. They have a lot of questions, and it costs them a lot of money to repair their mouths when there was so much neglect during childhood.
I always say, if I can't eat curry chicken, that's it for me.
It's all about the curry chicken.
But, you know, we were talking about this. Right now, so there are two counties in Florida that don't have a dentist, and a mid-level provider could serve in a dental office under the supervision of a dentist and see Medicaid children. Up to 40% have received no dental care.
That's
so tell
right.
us about that.
That's right. Well, there's two things that happen. Let's say the family qualifies for Medicaid coverage. Then they go to call a dentist. And we've had cases where people in this area have had to drive to the other coast, over to Tampa area, in order to find a federally qualified healthcare clinic that would see them. There are long waiting lists when you have a shortage of dentists and practitioners that can see them. Dental offices don't want to have to deal with Medicaid because they don't get reimbursed very well for it, and it takes a lot of paperwork and almost another person in the office to manage that. So it's kind of a double-edged sword, if
right.
you will. Also, again, the health literacy needs to be raised, because maybe the parents don't realize how important it is. They're just baby teeth. They're going to lose them anyway, which is a myth. Those baby teeth are very important to hold the structure of the jaw. A dental therapist could be doing that kind of education if they were working in the school system.
So would you say then that Florida is facing an oral care crisis?
Oh, absolutely. You know, when you look at this study that says 63 of Florida's 67 counties have a shortage area. You know, that's 90% of our counties have a shortage area of available dentists. And we're not going to be able to provide that many dentists coming out of school to these areas. And they typically, because they have big loans on their budget when they come out, they're going to typically go to a larger, more metropolitan area rather than an area that's more remote and more difficult to set up a practice.
And so one of the studies says that according to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, more than 5.5 million Floridians, that's almost over a quarter of the state's population, reside in 232 communities designated as dental care health professional shortage areas.
That's correct.
Wow, and there's actually, I can't believe that.
Right.
So why, I mean, we don't hear about this in mainstream media, and nobody talks about this.
That's why I'm here, and a lot of people like me.
Right.
There's been several that are traveling around the state talking to different groups. I've spoken to several local civic groups, trying to get their involvement and educating them why that's so important. And people are always startled by these statistics. I know I was when I came to Florida from Michigan, because we have a lot more availability of services for people that are on Medicaid or are low income.
And the Health and Human Services estimates that we need an additional 1,200 dental practitioners here. Does that include the dental therapist as well, or just dentist?
Dentist, yeah. And so we know that's not going to happen.
So how do we get, I mean, besides legislation, I guess education and awareness is always the two things, goes hand in hand with each other. What else can we do? I mean, this is a crisis.
It is a crisis, particularly when you start looking at the financials of it, you know, what it's costing us as taxpayers to have people going to emergency rooms for a toothache. We recently had a pediatric dentist that came and spoke to our dental association, and she shows us pictures of babies that have to be hospitalized and put under general anesthesia because they have such bad infection in their jaws from infected teeth. So that's really risky to put a baby under general anesthesia. So she has been an advocate working with physicians, and her campaign is lift the lip. She says the physicians look at the throat, at the tonsils. Why are they not looking at the teeth and making referrals early on?
And a study says that in Connecticut, they have a lower percentage of its residents that has their lower oral, where their oral health needs are met. So Connecticut is doing really well with this.
Yes.
Versus Florida. And what's the model?
A lot of places up north.
I know. So what did Connecticut do right to help their citizens get better oral health care versus what we're not doing here? What did they do there? Do we know?
I can't answer that question. I haven't studied that.
I know Ruth is from Connecticut. Ruth, Connecticut is doing a lot of great things. What do you think?
Well, I'd like to defer to Jan, who actually works in a medical dental complex.
Right. I'm the director of the Health Sciences Library at the University of Connecticut. And we have an excellent School of Dental Medicine. I think there's a real focus on community service. I know we have a physician who is working externally in what they call the quiet corners of Connecticut to do medical education and outreach to those areas. I just think that overall there's a genuine commitment from the universities to support good dental hygiene.
Yeah. Well, I know when we were children, we didn't have toothbrushes and we didn't really have toothpaste. I think I didn't get my first toothbrush until I was, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 years old. It was 18 of us. We didn't have toothbrushes. We had a little wooden stick that my mother would bite the end of it and make a brush. And in Indian, they call it a datwan. That's what it's called. And that's what we use with coal and ash to brush our teeth. But people in America are blessed in that we have Colgate. We have toothbrushes, we have dentists, and we have insurance, and we have people that should be caring about all citizens. But I read recently where state lawmakers want to expand the access to dental care by allowing dental therapists, hygienists, and assistants to offer oral care treatments, but certain people are pushing back on that. I don't understand why they would push back on that when they know we need 1,200 practitioners in the state of Florida.
Well, I can tell you what I heard with testimony from some of the dentists when it was in committee hearing. One of the things they're concerned about is that person is not trained. They're not trained as well as a dentist.
Yes.
So let's talk about that. Okay, so a dentist really can do over 400 procedures in the mouth. A therapist will be trained with, correct me if I'm wrong, 90 procedures that the dental therapist
can
do.
Well, no one's going to correct you if you're wrong because we won't know.
So, but
we can look it up.
Yeah. Well, that
plus
will
she
be.
Teaches.
She
right.
used to teach.
Right.
So
we're pretty sure you're the expert here.
Well, and so with that being said, the dental therapist will be trained on the same, they're teachable skills. They will be trained to extract primary teeth, to restore primary teeth, of a child in a much more cost-effective manner than what it would cost to have a dentist provide those same procedures. You know, a dental office could have several dental therapists working under their supervision, so they still have their control. But that was one of the arguments. Another one, there was a oral surgeon who I believe is also a physician, and he testified to dealing with patients that have complex medical histories. And what is that dental therapist going to do if there should be a medical emergency? I can tell you, having been a professor of dental hygiene for 30 years, that is taught in the curriculum. It's part of accreditation standards. We do drills, you know, what if a patient has this and they have to then react. So we have role-playing when this happens. We do it routinely. They never know when an incident's going to happen, whether it's real or not real. You know, and so those are teachable skills, okay? And so I think they are fully prepared to deal with that emergency. Hygienists have been doing it.
Well, the nurse practitioners and the physician assistants know what to do. They'll call the physician or call 911.
Exactly.
Right? But the thing is, I read where it says that the case for expanding the scope of practice for these mid-level providers is stronger now than it's ever been. So whatever you guys are doing, the activists who were in Tallahassee lobbying and talking to people, it's working. Because State Senator Jeff Brandes, he says that the therapist would offer families who lack reliable access to dentists the opportunity to receive affordable oral care. So he's listening.
He's been a wonderful advocate. Yeah, he's been a wonderful advocate for us and was the sponsor of the bill. And he was also, of course, testifying. And they just decide, you know, we're thrilled that we even made it to a hearing in the Senate, because that hasn't always happened in other states that already have it. It took much longer. So we're on
baby
a roll.
Baby steps.
We're on a roll. If we can get all of your listeners, you know, to help us and call their senators if they need more information, I'm certainly available. I think you're going to give my website.
Yeah. But you know, Ruth, I was paying attention to this, and I was, you know, I said, let me read what about the dental therapist and what Linda's working on. And I read that 9% of the dentists are going to be retiring within the next 5 years, which means in addition to the 1,200 that we need, we're going to have to replace the 9% that's retiring. So how do we do this? How do we spread the education that, yes, we need to start paying attention to oral health?
Well, I think the very fact that Linda and her cohort are working so hard to bring this issue forward in the legislature, you know, the legislatures are large committees, and you know, they, instead of horses, they make camels. I mean, you know, everybody has to sound off, everybody has to grandstand. It takes time, but what you're doing is water, you know, is water drops, and those drops add up, and pretty soon you've got a lake. I really feel strongly that your first steps have been remarkable and very effective to bring this topic to the conscience of the people.
Right.
Now we have to move forward and make it actually something that they will support, not just privately, but publicly, yes.
That is so true. And the Dental Association has a lot of money and powerful lobbyists, and they have used that. And that's been difficult for us as a Dental Hygiene Association to compete with. And I can tell you that just in Tallahassee, I believe, last week, I lose track of the time. We had over
100. That's a good thing about being retired.
Well, we had over 100 hygienists that all showed up in their lab coats to meet with the legislators for 2 days.
That's marvelous.
They came that evening. They had a breakfast. They met individually from their counties with their representatives. And I'm hoping that made an impact. Of course, the Dentist Association had already been there prior to us being there. But they were hearing one side of it. I certainly hope that we open some eyes. We have so much data and good information.
Well, and one of the things I don't think we mentioned on this part of the segment was your connection with League of Women Voters.
Yes.
So why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about that and how they can possibly join and be part of the crusade with you for the League of Women Voters, because that's a big part of it as well.
It is. And actually, the League of Women Voters are one of the endorsers of this legislation. There are 50 groups, United Way, Department of Public Health, I mean, and on, I don't have all of those in front of me. But the League of Women Voters has been wonderful in educating and helping move this movement even further. I happen to serve locally here on the Healthcare Committee. We are the League of Women Voters of the Space Coast. You can Google us and we'll pop right up, and there's information there on joining. We would love to have some additional members to help us with our crusade.
It's always good when you partner up with people that have like-minded issues in their heart and they want to help. But, you know, studies have shown, I think it's 1,100 studies across 26 countries have found that dental hygienists and assistants provide patients safe and effective care.
Absolutely.
So what is the South Florida Dental Association pushing back against?
Well, they keep saying it's unsafe, but they have no data to prove that. So I love what Dr. Frank Catalano always says. Well, when you're talking to dentists, say, I understand how you feel about the dental therapist issue, but could you please show me some research where they have been unsafe? Because there's never been any legislation, any suits brought against dental therapists. You know, there may have been a couple that popped up where people wanted, but it was thrown out of court. So there's never been any danger associated with a licensed, credentialed, supervised by a dentist.
Well, they're warning that's just going to be like a hurricane coming if this legislation passes and we can have mid-level practitioners in the field of dentistry.
Medicine went through it too.
Yeah.
I mean, Sita, you're a nurse. You know how nurses have had to fight.
I mean,
and when mid-level practitioners came mm-hmm. through, I think there's a certain turf that the profession wants to protect, and they get very threatened when there's something that could be a potential threat.
I think you need to really recruit some dentists, and there'll be plenty of them.
Oh, we have several. We do have several.
You know, many more women are getting into dentistry, and although I
60%, as a matter of fact,
of the current classes are now dental are women. Right. And I believe you can appeal to them directly. I really think that the league could put out a call for every woman dentist in Florida to join this campaign. And I bet you'd get a large response because they got into the field to help people.
Right. And the bill, honestly, would allow Florida the opportunity to be a leader in reducing regulatory barriers by developing a more efficient and effective dental care delivery model.
It would help everybody.
It would help everybody.
Exactly.
And as you speak about getting the women dentist involved, probably our biggest advocates are the pediatric dentists. They see firsthand, just like the doctor that runs the infant clinic at University of Florida. She said, it is so heartbreaking. We were all in tears when she was showing us the picture of the infections these children had in their mouth before 5 years old that were so serious they had to be hospitalized.
Well, and I remember Dr. Oz putting the triangle shape over his nose and over his mouth and calling that the zone of death.
Exactly. Whenever
infection happens in your mouth like that or in your sinuses,
it
goes right to your brain, or it could potentially go right to your brain.
Oh,
and
we've
causing
had,
something
we have documented
fatal.
Deaths. In fact, DeMonte Desmond in 2007 made national news. This child had an infection, went to the emergency room, and they were not able to save him. It went to his brain, and he died as a result of something that is preventable.
And go back into what you had said before. We have facts about that, and we have
research about that.
Yes. We have no research that says that a dental therapist is
the
not the right
thing
way
in
to
the
go.
State of Florida, a lot of people don't want facts and proper data. We see that with the environment.
Well,
we see it with the
science business.
Yes.
Is ridiculous.
We see it. But
I would like to address one more thing, Linda, and I think mm-hmm. you mentioned. Here you heard testimony or you heard cases by this dental practitioner, a pediatric dentist.
Yes.
Was she able to speak to the legislature?
Yes. I don't think she was in that committee meeting, but she's a big advocate over in Gainesville where she's very active with the dental school. In fact, what she has is she has some outsourcing where she goes to work in the schools with teenage mothers. And she brings them education, information, oral care supplies, tells them how critical it is that they start taking care of their baby's teeth from the moment of birth. So
she's
doing a lot voluntarily, you know, working with young
and that
moms.
Leads me to the next question. Okay, here's the cost money. A dentist will train for 4 years and come out of dental school with maybe $270,000 in debt. Versus a therapist who would go to school for 2 years and pay a little as $36,000. I'm sure that plays into this decision that the Dental Association is coming up with. So maybe we ought to look at ways to help the dentists with their student loans. I mean, it is a legitimate concern because if you have to pay, I see Jan's raising her hand for that mm-hmm. question. Go ahead, Jan.
Right. I know that some of the universities in Connecticut have offered breaks on their tuition if they commit to certain specialties. And I wonder if that could be done for dentistry as well. One other question, Sita, as a nurse, I know that when nurse practitioners first came into the field, that doctors were incredibly threatened. And of course, now they know that one of the great predictors of your health in a hospital is the quality of your nurse.
Right. And I tell you, there are some wonderful nurse practitioners out there and physician assistants. And a shout out to Ellie Logan, our friend, who's a nurse practitioner at Health First. We love her. And my husband's a physician. We hired nurse practitioners. They're awesome. But you're right. We had to fight for that. But, you know, they do the dental hygienists right now. They're providing a variety of routine treatments under the supervision of dentists and private practices, as well as community setting in schools and nursing homes. They're already doing it. So why not go one step further and give them freedom to practice? You were
going to
say?
Well, I was going to say in regard to your comment about getting tuition breaks, in Michigan, through the federally qualified healthcare clinics, we give the opportunity for dental students to give service or take employment with them, and then they will then not pay, but what's the word I'm looking for? Forgive.
Debt forgiveness.
Debt forgiveness.
Student debt forgiveness.
And, in fact,
and that's something
right
that
now,
Mayor P talked about yesterday.
That's happening in Florida. There has been, there's also another bill because the dentists are saying, look, we need to have some loan forgiveness in order to get more dentists to come and practice in this state. And there is some pending legislation for that to happen in Florida.
Well, they're
glad
saying,
you brought that up.
Well, yeah. You know, rural communities in particular stand to benefit from improved access to basic dental services. And Minnesota became the first state to license mid-level professionals in 2009. And a study found that people in Minnesota experience a reduction in wait times required to receive dental care. 48% of the dental therapists were serving suburban and rural communities. And it really worked in that state. Patients, the outcome, you can see it. The state can see it.
Alaska was another one of the early ones. When you think about how many remote areas there are in Alaska, it's had a huge impact in that area. In fact, I heard a speaker again over in Tampa that was speaking about, she actually runs several of the clinics in Minnesota. And I'm going out to visit those clinics where dental therapists are employed this summer.
Well, Jan, our visiting friend, Jan from, Jan, is it Connecticut?
Yes.
Jan, who's visiting, and I'm going to say Jan Swiatek.
Right.
She is a friend, she's here in studio with us. She's a friend of my friend, Ruth Lambert, who is also my BFF's mother, a stepmother, Julie Harrison. And it's, you know, the world is so connected, right? We market, we love, we share ideas, we learn from each other. And it's so wonderful to have you guys in the studio with Linda Muhlenberg, Paul and Ellen and I on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. So go ahead and add into the Minnesota people and what a great job they're doing with their mid-level dental therapist.
Right. I was just curious, Linda, I know that one of the movements, I'm lucky I've worked in enough dental and medical facilities that I have some sense of some of the politics. And I know one of the big movements for physicians has been a multidisciplinary approach so that they learn to work within a team, and I think it's fostered a lot of respect for nurses in working with physicians and pharmacists. Is there anything like that in dental schools?
Paul, how much time do we have? Because I want Linda to answer, but... Oh, wonderful. Cool. Look at that. You got 5.5 minutes to answer that question.
I'm glad you brought that up. In fact, right here out of University of Florida and a couple of my friends over in the Tampa area, Brad and Kim Harriman's, Brad runs 12 federally qualified healthcare clinics over in Hillsborough County, and they are doing a medical dental integration project where they're bringing the pediatric physicians while they're in school to rotate through the clinics. They're working directly with supervised dental hygienists and dentists that they see the connection. So that is a movement that is very definitely going on because we have so much science about how much happens in the mouth that travels through the rest of the body to all the organs in your body, whether it's your pancreas. Pregnant mothers were very concerned about low birth weight babies can be linked to periodontal infections. Some insurance companies are paying for them to go to the dentist and see their hygienist and get the periodontal infection cleared up because it's much more cost effective than having a premature baby that needs all that expensive hundreds of thousands of dollars of prenatal
and
postnatal care.
Right.
Yes.
You know, you always wonder why are people so overwhelmed to go to the dentist and in that dentist chair? What can we, because I had a question last night, somebody said to ask you, what is it about the anxiety level of being in that chair under all those lights in the dental office?
I think, you know, I look back at my own experience going to a dentist when I was a little girl, and it was terrifying. There was an awful smell in the office from the acrylics in the lab, and, you know, it was in a dark, kind of dingy stairway we had to go up. And, you know, I remember that
picture.
I remember that vividly. Yeah. And when you've had a scary experience as a child, that's a trauma. It never leaves your brain.
And if
you're poor. And if you're poor. And let me say now, We have spa dentistry.
Yes.
I mean, my dentist, I get my hands treated in a hot wax treatment. I get a hot towel over my eyes. There's a makeup mirror that you can go redo your makeup after you've had impressions.
Yeah, my dentist is awesome. And he retired once and came back. He's almost 80, but I love... Now, I think it's trust and respect.
Oh, very much
I so. I trust my dentist and I respect him and I hope he... practices till he's 100 years old. But the thing, and I'm seeing him today, as a matter of fact, I have a bite that's a little off. But I remember being 15 years old, and this is why I think I am such an activist from the heart, because I lived through so many experiences. I remember being 15 years old, and I had a tooth that had decay, and my mother took me to the dentist, and he said, it's 45 Trinidad and Tobago dollars to extract the teeth, and if you want to fill it, it's 100. My mother said, pull the teeth. So I ended up losing a good tooth because we were poor and down and out in our luck. And you know what? That happens right here in the United States,
sure
too.
Does.
People can't afford to buy floss. They can't afford to buy toothpaste. They can't even afford a dental care. So, I mean, it goes to reason that we're not out of bounds when we talk about topics like this. It's happening all over the United States that people can't afford it.
Well, I think Linda's spot on, though. Florida, honestly, is especially... at the bottom of far too many indices. I mean, really, we have a retirement community here from all over the world. We have very intelligent people, and it doesn't show in our legislature and many of our laws.
Well,
it's really unfortunate.
We have,
but that's where we have to get involved.
Right.
We
got
to get involved with legal women voters.
If we could bring them in on Viewpoint with Seat and Friends, if we've had so many people here, common ground, just a common decency for mankind, that when you go to bed at night, and you have a warm blanket, and you have electricity, and you have food in your refrigerator, you should expect everybody else to have that. If you have proper dental care, and you have family members that can go to an affordable place to live, or have an education, or whatever, it's not about us. It's about all of us, not just us in our homes, right? And I think dental care is something that you can't talk about ill-fitting dentures for an elderly and weight loss and somebody coughing in a restaurant because they can't eat properly. Actually find out what it is. You'll find out that a lot of times people have a lot of issues. And you see a lot of waiters and waitresses, they get upset if somebody's taking long at a table. Well, guess what? It affects the economy too, because they'll sit at that table and chew because the dentures are not fitting right, or they can't swallow,
or there's pain.
So it is from the mouth to the heart, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It is.
So
give
dental
us the
access for all, correct? Dental access for all.
Floridians for dental access.
There we go.
.com, and there's plenty of information on here. One point we didn't get to is children in school. I spoke to the Retired Teacher Association. How can these kids get out of poverty if they're in pain and they can't learn in school? They're missing too many days of school.
That's right.
Well, and we
There's
need
so
preventative.
Many.
The focus has got to be not prevention. On treating that ulcerated mouth, but on prevention.
Right.
Right back to the beginning. It's much less expensive. It's much less painful.
And parents taking personal responsibility for their children. Right. We have to teach the parents how to take care.
Well,
a lot of them didn't have it for themselves, so they can't teach.
We got a lot of great information out today. We're going to be, check us out on Facebook Live. We did do a Facebook Live on our break. And make sure that you listen to our podcast. If you missed any of this, we'll have it on our website. And thank you so much for joining us on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We'll see you next week right here at 1 o'clock live.
This is the Christian Voice of Brevard on WWBC 1510 AM.
And you're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville, and the Beaches, as well as W234BI, Cocoa,